Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 661, early retiree Chris Reining.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Who doesn't love an early retirement story? Welcome to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. You know, we've dedicated lots of episodes on this podcast to those who have hit millions of dollars, retired early, and our guest today is one of them. Chris Reining retired at 37 after making his millions. He worked at his dream job initially in information technology, earning $75,000 a year. Pretty good. Not the hundreds of thousands or millions that I would have thought for someone to be able to retire so quickly. He admits he was living a pretty good lifestyle, but felt that the 9-to-5 grind was just too much. Been there. And so at 30, he set a goal of having $1 million in a brokerage account by 35. And he began saving 50% of his income, tens of thousands of dollars a year. And by 35, not only did he reach this goal, he surpassed it. And he credits this to one simple habit, and that is automation. Here is early retiree Chris Reining. Chris Reining, welcome to So Money.
I'm so happy to be here, Farnoosh.
This is incredible. I love talking to people so young like you. You're 30, 35?
38. I'm so
38.
Old now.
Okay. Well, then, so we're okay. So I'm actually younger than you. For once, I'm younger than one of my guests. So I love talking to people. You're still young, and by all intents and purposes, and you are a millionaire, something that you very consciously approached many years ago, sitting at your desk job, wanting to have $1 million by 35. That was a goal that you set. Why was that important to you at the time? And why $1 million?
Okay, so that is a lot to unpack. So I'll just start with a little bit of background and you can interrupt at any point. Okay. So yeah, I'm just, I grew up a regular guy in a town of about 25,000 in Illinois. And, you know, my family didn't have a lot of money growing up. We weren't poor, but we definitely weren't super well off either. And, you know, my dad worked a middle-class job. My mom stayed at home raising us three kids. Anyways, I followed a pretty typical life path. You know, I went to high school. I applied to colleges. And when I started college at a small school in Illinois, I was a finance major, probably not surprisingly. But then my sophomore year, I met this guy who was like really into computers, and his dorm room was like stuffed with computers and parts and all this stuff. And he had them running Linux. And like, I was just really mesmerized because I had never sort of seen that world before. And I was just completely fascinated by it. So I ended up switching my major to information systems, which is sort of like this blend between business and technology. And then I graduated and I took a job here in Wisconsin, in Madison, where I live, doing computer security. And I loved it because it was this like constantly evolving cat and mouse game between the good guys and the bad guys, right? The hackers. And after a few years, like I was making okay money. So I started buying nice stuff because I never really had nice stuff before. So I bought, you know, a condo downtown in Madison, and I always wanted a BMW. So I bought a BMW.
You were doing flying lessons, I read in the New York Times, which covered you as a super saver.
Yeah,
after
yeah.
The fact.
Yeah. I was doing flying lessons, and you know, I was living the American dream, right? And
What's wrong with that? Some might look at that and be like, good for you. You're using your money to make yourself happy, but you felt you were doing something wrong or you were not on the right track.
Well, here's the thing, Farnoosh. It was like I had that life, right? And it was great. But then what happened was I was getting bored in my career, right? Like I wasn't all that passionate about what I was doing anymore. And I was also becoming really disillusioned with the whole rat race, this whole 9-to-5 grind thing, because it was so repetitive. You know, I'd wake up, eat breakfast, walk to my car, drive to work, sit in a cubicle and stare at a screen for 8 hours, walk back to my car, drive home, make dinner, maybe watch some TV or whatever, and then do the same thing the next day. And I knew that if I didn't do something, like that was my epiphany moment. Like if I didn't do something, then that was going to be my life for the next 30 or 40 years. And I said, I just can't do that to myself. Like I can't do that to my future self. And that's when I took a step back and I realized that I had a choice, that I could work to spend all this money and all this great stuff living the American dream, or I could work to save and save to invest. So one day I could stop working because my investments would be working for me. And I mean, that's really like the whole idea of a traditional retirement anyways. It's just, I really wanted to accelerate that process. And so that's when I really started saving, investing. And yeah, by the time I was 35, I was probably at the point where I could walk away and I would be fine. But it took a couple more years until I was 37, until I actually quit my job and retired early.
So I want to ask about the acceleration process, because that's a lot of money to save in a short period of time. And I also want to know why $1 million was really important to you, what it really affords. But before we get to that, I kind of had this question as you were talking about, you know, not enjoying your career. Why not find a career you enjoy? You know, find your passion, pursue that, make the money, and like have best of both worlds. It sounded like maybe the way you were making money was not fulfilling. Was that ever a consideration?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I was actually just thinking about that the other day. And here was my thought process was like, okay, if I, you know, I built this career, right? Like I'd spent 10, 15 years building this career and I was making good money, right? And so if I walked away from that career to do something else that was more, you know, fulfilling or was more passionate about it, right? Like I was going to take a big step back from my earning potential. So there was that option. But then when I was playing that option out in my mind, where I went was like, okay, if I switch careers and I don't know, I become an architect, because when I was a little kid, like that was my dream job, was being an architect. And so like,
yes, we know a lot about what we want to be when we're little kids. Like it's actually, we're pretty warm to that real job that we're going to have when we're older, like at least the job that's going to fulfill us. So listen to that inner child.
Right. It's that intuition. I don't think you're, I'm much better about trusting my intuition these days than I was in the past, but yeah, good point. I was like, okay, if I switch my career and I go back to school and I become an architect, like what's not to say that after 5 or 10 years of doing that, like I'm not completely bored and like I hate doing that grind too. So in my mind, I was like, okay, I can just do what I hate in order to do what I love. So like put up with the short-term pain of, you know, really getting to a place financially where I don't have to do anything. And then like I can do anything I want to, or like I could have just stepped out of my current career and gone down another path. And I think that's a perfectly viable option as well. It's just something that I thought a little bit longer term about, because I didn't want to get trapped in the same way that I got trapped.
Right. Yeah, I can see where, you know, it's a little bit more pain up front, but then the possibilities are endless in within a short period of time. Once you've saved so aggressively, you can pretty much explore anything and make mistakes. If you explore one thing, it doesn't turn out to be ideal, you can afford it. You have the runway. I get it. Totally get it. Makes sense. All right. So let's talk about how you did it. And I was reading through the New York Times profile of you back in 2015, titled Super Savers, Focus on the Goal. And you actually opened the piece. Great piece, by the way. How do you get the New York Times to write about you? That's a great get.
You have an interesting story, I guess.
Well, yeah, but how do they find you? There's a lot of interesting stories out there. No, really, tell me. I want to know.
Paul Sullivan was the guy who did the story on me.
Paul Sullivan. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. He's been on the show.
Yeah. He's great. He's a great guy. And so, yeah, we had, I don't know, we just crossed paths, via email, at some point. And then he was doing a story and he thought I'd be a great fit for the story. And, you know,
wonderful.
That's how it happened.
Always, you know. All right. So in this piece, it talks about how you were, we already covered a lot of this, but you know, you were having a lot of self-reflection in your job. You were not happy. You were at the time making about $75,000 a year in information technology. And so, yes, you cut back on a lot of things, like you got rid of those flying lessons, but at some point too, you had to make more money in order to reach $1 million. So walk me through the acceleration plan that you created for yourself to reach $1 million by 35, 36. Well, and this really is $1 million in your brokerage account. This isn't like equity in a home. This is like liquid money.
Right. Like I never counted that stuff. Like a lot of people like count, yes, like their car sitting in the driveway and their bicycle and how much their cat's worth and all this stuff. Like all that stuff, like I never really counted as part of my whatever net worth, right? Like it was just like money in the bank was like what I was focused on. So to answer your question, I think the acceleration really comes down to two things, right? It comes down to saving more and earning more, right? So if you pull on those two levers, like you open up this huge potential pot of money that then you can use to invest, right? So the saving piece, I mean, we covered that a little bit, but I think the biggest point there was like, I had no idea where my money was going. So the very first step I took was tracking where my money went. And I used a Google spreadsheet for this, but you know, there's online tools like mint.com or whatever that can do this stuff for you automatically. But I liked doing it manually because it made it much more more tangible, right? Like it's much more real when I'm sitting there typing numbers into a spreadsheet, because I don't know, these days with all these electronic transfers and, you know, you can swipe your card or swipe your wrist and you're spending money, like you sort of lose that relationship that you're actually spending real money. And so I think this process of like figuring out where my money was going was really eye-opening, because I could finally calculate that, you know, spending about 90% of my take-home pay. And once you start seeing like how much you're spending, it becomes much easier to start cutting out things that that don't make you happy. So for me, over the course of about 5 years, my savings rate slowly increased year over year from about 10% to over 50%. And the other thing I want to point out was that, you know, saving isn't about depriving yourself, right? So like people think like, oh, if I save money, then, you know, I have to be eating rice and beans every day for the rest of my life. Like, no, like you can spend money on the things that make you the happiest. And so like I personally, like I love to travel. So like I don't mind spending lavishly on travel. But on the flip side of that, like I'll cut out things that I really don't care about.
Well, they say that, you know, saving up to 10% is ideal for the average person, but that's if you want to retire like never, or like by, you know, in your 60s and your 70s. And one of the things I think is important to highlight is where you were or are living, because I think it's much more difficult to save 50% of your salary when you're living in, say, a coastal state city like San Francisco or New York City. Where were you at the time? Are you still in the Midwest when you're doing this?
Yeah. I'm still in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been here for 15 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Where were you saving the most? Like where were you? Cause real, let's be honest, housing costs a lot of money. Taxes cost a lot of money. So if you can sort of manage those two costs, keep them to a minimum, you're already halfway there. I think that's a big chunk of everyone's budget.
Right. So here's sort of my philosophy on that is like when I started slashing my spending, you know, I started out with the small stuff. And this is the latte factor that David Bach has talked about on your podcast. So like every morning I used to stop for a red eye, which is a coffee with a shot of espresso. It's delicious. If you haven't had one, you should have one. And, you know, it didn't cost much. It was like $5. Right. And that's where some, you know, personal finance people will say, you know, you shouldn't worry about spending $5 on a coffee. You should be going after, you know, the big wins like housing and cars and all that sort of stuff. But I don't necessarily agree with that approach. And I'll tell you why. It's because making like a small, manageable change improves your ability to change the big things. So, I mean, you can think about like a marathon. You don't just go run 26 miles if you've never run before. You slowly build up to it over a long period of time. And it's no different if you're trying to work on saving more money. You start out with something small, like saving $5 on coffee. And once you're successful with that, then it becomes easier to save $50 by, I don't know, cutting something out like cable or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you cut out the next big thing and the next big thing. And that's where I see people like run into trouble is thinking they'll go after the big wins right away, like downsizing their house and selling their car and, you know, never going out to eat ever again. But that's like way too overwhelming.
No, you can't go cold turkey on things. You can't just turn off the faucet. You could on some things that aren't important to you. And I do agree there's like lifestyle cost creep. You know, you just sort of get used to a lifestyle. You get used to the auto payments on things that you forgot you're even auto paying for. And listeners, I should tell listeners that Chris has all of this documented on his blog, chrisreining.com. And by the way, I was going through your blog and I fell upon a blog post, an article that said something like being a millionaire is not everything it's chalked up to be. So was all this for nothing?
Well, here's the thing that was really interesting about reaching seven figures. It was like, I think it was like, if you win the lottery, right, and you get this huge windfall all at once, like that'd be super exciting, right? Cause you go from like nothing to like millions in the bank. But for me, it was almost anticlimactic because, you know, I'd been working towards it for literally years, right? And when my, you know, when my account like switched over to seven figures, I remember I was like laying in bed and I looked at it and I said, cool. And then like, I went back to work. And so it was kind of a, you know, that seems crazy, but it was kind of a letdown. And I think like the bigger win was just like realizing way back when that, like, if I saved and invested, like someday I would reach that goal. I just had to be persistent about it.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy. You want a bra that's comfortable. You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution: more knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, even the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/SoMoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/SoMoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/SoMoney. When you did reach $1 million in your bank account, in your brokerage accounts, what was that day like? Do you remember that day vividly? Was the sun shining? Were the birds chirping? Take us to that moment and how you felt and what you remembered feeling.
I remember that I was literally laying in bed, and you know, like I checked my brokerage account, and yeah, there was a leading one there, and I said, cool. And you know, that was just like, it was really anticlimactic. Like, it wasn't anything big.
Did you celebrate in any way? Did you call your family? Did you write about it? Did you post it on Facebook? What did you do?
No, like it's always been a little bit weird talking about it, right? Because it almost felt like
bragging.
Yeah. And I've sort of struggled with that, like actually being open about my finances, because it's like airing your underwear out there, right? Like, it's been really difficult for me to actually open up about that stuff. But on the flip side of that is,
you're helping so many people. You're inspiring so many people.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I didn't realize that. That was a mistake that I made, or sort of a mental challenge that I had to work through, was that, you know, I like sharing my story and actually sharing the juicy financial details actually helps a lot of people, because most people want to see behind the curtain about how this stuff works. Mm-hmm. And so, right, on the one hand, like I was really nervous about sharing all this stuff, but on the other hand, I've gotten, you know, hundreds of emails thanking me for being so transparent, honest, and open about my finances, because no one is sharing this stuff. Like, no one likes to talk about their personal finances. It's just not something that we really do in our culture. It's something that's always seems to be behind closed doors.
So now what is the goal? Now that you have reached the first goal, do you have another financial goal in mind?
No, I don't have any financial goals in mind right now. Right now, I am just enjoying my life. I'm spending a lot more time on other areas of my life that, you know, maybe were a little bit neglected in the past.
Such as
now that I have all my time back, which was the bigger goal here, was just getting my time back. Now I'm spending more time on exercise. So I exercise like 3-4 times a week. I have a regular yoga practice that I have time for now. I started doing meditation, have a meditation practice, and I go on, 10-day meditation, silent meditation retreats. I do more travel. So it's like, I have time to spend in other areas of my life that I feel like when I was working in a 9-to-5 job, I just didn't have time for it, right? Because you're not just working 9-to-5, like there's all this other overhead that goes with working, right? Like commuting to work. You know, you still have to like keep up your house and cook and clean and all this stuff. And it's like, there's a lot more time now that I have that I can sort of reroute to other areas of my life.
Oh, so what do your parents think? You said you were a little like unsure about sharing this. Like, when you get together with your family, does it come up? I mean, you have a blog, you're in the New York Times, so it's kind of hard to escape what the reality is. So what are the conversations like?
They, I think they're really proud of me, right? Like, because I, and my friends as well, like I had this goal, right, of leaving the workforce at a young age. And I think it took a certain amount of discipline and persistence to get there. And that goes for anybody, right? Like, if anybody wants to retire early or just retire at a traditional age, right? Like, it takes a certain amount of discipline in order to get there. And so I think that, you know, everyone is really, really proud that I, you know, was able to achieve that goal and sort of live my life in the way that I want to live it, rather than how, you know, most of the other people in the world live their lives.
Would you say you're more disciplined than your peers, that you might be more dispositioned? You have predispositions for something like this, more so than like the average person. And why do you think that, if so?
Why do I think
you're more equipped to do something like this? Because the truth is, it does take a lot of discipline. Like you said, it does take a lot of stamina. And I mean, look, most people can't do this. Let's be honest. Most people are not amassing $1 million by 35 because they made a plan, and they, you know, maybe they got it there because they got an inheritance or they won the lottery, but they're not doing it because they cut back and they made more and they made a plan. And so what do you think that says about your personality and perhaps even how you were raised? You know, what was the, I was just talking to somebody about this and he thinks that it's, his name is Deepak Chopra, and he actually thinks that we're programmed to, it's in our programming to react the way we do with money and about money. What's your programming like?
That's an interesting question. So I think that, you know, you hear from studies, right, that you're either, you're predisposed to either being a saver or a spender, right? And I think that, you know, just growing up, like I was talking about earlier, like we didn't really have a lot of money. And so, you know, like saving, like my parents were really, you know, frugal because they had to be, right? So I think that just seeing that sort of rubbed off on me, just living a sort of frugal lifestyle. But then, you know, I think I also had to go through the fact that, you know, I never had nice things before. So that was like a huge shift for me was buying like a really nice place to live in and buying a BMW and going to Whole Foods every week and spending $200 on gourmet food, right? Like I had to live that life to sort of understand that that wasn't me, right? Like that, like I didn't, like that wasn't important to me and it didn't make me any happier. And so I think I sort of had to go through that process of sort of growing up frugal and then sort of living this expensive lifestyle and then going back to being much more on the frugal scale. And I think, yeah, discipline is definitely part of it. I mean, if you want to be successful with anything in life, it really comes down to being disciplined. I mean, you can look across all areas of life and, you know, the most successful people are
self-control, discipline. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but I think that's a muscle, right? It's like a muscle that you have to exercise. So here's a story about that. I recently went gambling with a friend and
No, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm not a gambler, right? Like
How much did you gamble?
I'll tell you. He wanted to meet at this casino and I'm like, whatever, we'll go to this casino. And so I took, I don't know, I had like $40. I had $40 with me. And so we're playing a dollar roulette. And so after a few rounds, I'm up to $60. And then after a few more rounds, I'm down to like 50. And we've been playing for, I don't know, an hour or so. And that's when I tell myself, okay, I am going to put $10 on 24 and then I can lose and I'll still walk away with the $40 that I started with. So it's basically a wash, right? Like everyone wants to end up even when they leave the gambling floor. Yeah. So
maybe you got a few drinks while you're at it.
Yeah. Get some few drinks. You know, yeah. Have some fun. So I stack up these 10 $1 chips on number 24. And then the dealer spins the wheel, you know, and then the ball bounces around and around and around and it lands on 24. And like everyone at that table is like high-fiving me. And the dealer, you know, pushes over $350 in chips. And
you walked away, right?
I walked away. Good. I took them $10 and I walk away. And I'm going to tell you that I found walking away like really, really difficult because of the societal pressures. Like everyone at the table was telling me that I had to stay. I couldn't go anywhere, but I had this plan and sticking to my plan was more important to me because it's almost like I have to prove to myself that I have self-discipline. And I think that it's this muscle that you need to exercise if you want to be successful with anything in life, but especially with money.
I think that's a great personification. That story really does like bring to life so many examples of when it's really important to walk away, whether that's, but we don't because we feel pressured to stay in whatever it is we're doing, whether that's working a job that's super high profile, makes us a lot of money, but we're miserable. But, you know, we get a lot of pride in doing it perhaps, or like a lot of attention, you know, people like admire us for the work that we do, but we're just not happy doing it, but we continue to do it at our own demise. Or like you, you know, being at the roulette table, everyone's so excited for your win. They want to continue the ride. And so you do sometimes because like, that's just what, you know, it's fun. Like you want to play into that, but it's, and it is harder to walk away, but I think long-term far more rewarding, even though in the short term, it may seem a little bit of a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's a totally great story. I like that story a lot. You didn't say exactly, maybe I would love to maybe go down memory lane with you and do talk about what it was like growing up. You sort of said, like, you know, you had the stay-at-home mom, the hardworking dad, very much a traditional archetype family background. What's a very vivid money memory that you had growing up?
Okay. So the story that stuck was probably when we went to Disney World, right? So that was like the biggest vacation we ever took. So exciting as a kid.
I'm trying to avoid it at all costs.
Literally, right? We drove all the way to Florida from Illinois in our, you know, Buick station wagon, which was like so hot. I don't even think it had air conditioning. And to save money, my dad would like reserve rooms at the, or a room at the Days Inn with like two double beds for two people. And then I remember like my sisters and I would have to hide in the back of the station wagon until my dad got the key from the manager. And then me and my sisters would like sneak into the room so the manager wouldn't see us. And then one of us would, you know, sleep on a sleeping bag on the floor. If you drew that short straw, you'd have to sleep on the floor. So I think that sort of taught me about trade-offs, right? That you can't have it all, even though people see, you know, like to say that you can have it all, especially here in the States. Like that's like the American dream. But what I took away from that was like, on one hand, we could afford to go to Disney once. I mean, a lot of families aren't even fortunate enough to go to Disney, but, you know, we were going to be staying in the Days Inn, and we were going to be staying in like the poshest of hotels and like eating out at restaurants all the time. Like we were packing lunches and eating them in the park. And I think another good example of that was I caught Jerry Jones, the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, he was caught on TV in his suite talking on a flip phone during a game. And oh, that actually reminds me, when I heard you on Altucher's podcast, and mm-hmm. I love James Altucher, you mentioned that John Paul DeJora has a flip phone too. And I was wondering why that was.
He doesn't even have a computer. Okay. So maybe that'll explain why he also has a flip phone. He doesn't do email. He doesn't have a computer. I think that is the ultimate luxury to be a billionaire. And I always say it because this means when you're so inaccessible in some ways, people can't reach you, but you can reach anyone because you're so rich and you're so resourceful. Like he doesn't have to, like, he'll just make a call to his assistant and he's like, get so-and-so on the phone for me, please. Versus, you know, you and I, like, there's no way we'd be able to reach him so easily. So I feel like that is the ultimate power play. It's the ultimate billionaire power play. That's what I've deducted from it. But I think for him too, it's just like, he's also very zen. Like if you walk into his office, it's very, very peaceful. You know, I just think that he's also old school. He's in his 70s. He didn't grow up with much technology. And so, he was never an early adopter. He's never been really an adopter. So it just kind of works for him. He's found a way to work around it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And maybe that sort of parallels with Jerry Jones as well, because when someone asked him about why, you know, someone asked him in an interview shortly after he was caught talking on a flip phone, why he had a $1.2 billion stadium, but was talking on a flip phone. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, it's how you have a stadium worth $1.2 billion if you watch your pennies. And
I don't know if that was how we got to buy the stadium. It's not that much money to buy an iPhone when you're a billionaire. You know, it's not going to like dig that deep of a hole in your pocket. But
what he's saying, right, is like it's about trade-offs, right? Like you can't have it all. Like you're making every time you're spending money, like you're making a trade-off about something that, you know, you're not going to be able to get because of the fact that you're spending money on something else.
Right, makes sense. Chris Reining, thank you so much for stopping by. Let's do some quickly before I let you go. Some So Money fill in the blanks. Listeners have been saying to me, Farnoosh, sometimes you let guests go without doing this. And we really enjoy this sort of, you know, curveball that you throw at them at the end. So how this works is I'll start a sentence and then you finish it. First thing that comes to mind.
Got it.
if I won the lottery, let's say you were at that roulette table and you ended up winning like hundreds of millions of dollars, the first thing I would do is?
I would walk away.
Walk away. Yeah. Okay. So let's say
you donate it. I would donate
the
money.
Donate it. Like, okay.
If I won $100 million, I'm in a place where I don't want it and I would donate it.
Nice. When I splurge, like big time, big spender, one thing I splurge on that I'm not feeling bad about that I would do over and over again, it's my sustenance. I must do this.
Biggest splurge. It's travel. It's back to travel. Like I don't mind spending lavishly on travel.
Mm-hmm. And I notice in the Times piece that while you do travel to exotic places and you make a point to travel, you're not staying in like 5-star hotels.
Right. So again, it's about trade-offs, right? Like I'd rather go someplace exotic and, you know, I'm not going to be in my hotel room for 12 hours. So I don't really care about like how fancy my hotel room is.
Right. As an example. Exactly. Who cares? You're out and about. One thing I spend on that makes my life easier or better is?
Chocolate. I love chocolate.
Yeah? So what's your favorite brand?
I like the green and black chocolate bar. So I usually just like straight up cocoa. So I'll get like 85% dark chocolate.
Mm. Have you ever tried Mass Brothers?
I don't think I've seen that one.
They sell them all over in like Brooklyn shops and they just have a beautiful package. They have beautiful packaging. I'm a sucker for like really nice packaging, just like with wine, you know, like I don't know what's going to taste like, but I love the label.
So I'll check it out. I'll look for it.
It's expensive. It's like $9. So, but it's, you know, it's not something you're going to eat right, you know, in one day.
Right.
For like a week. One thing I wish I had learned about money growing up is
one thing I wish I had known about money growing up is that money is not the answer.
Money is not the answer. Let's see what else is here is on the list. When I donate, I like to give to blank because.
When I donate, I like to give to my alma mater because education I think is super important, and I was lucky enough to be able to go to college, and I want that same opportunity for other people as well who might not be able to financially afford it.
Yes, I love that. Tim and I also donate to our alma mater. We share a college, Penn State. So we're very proud of that. We want to give opportunities to kids who, you know, don't have to, so they don't have to take out hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans to get a degree.
Right. That's great.
And last but not least, I'm Chris Reining. I'm so money because.
Because I'm living the dream.
You're living the dream. I'm so happy for you. Thanks for sharing your story and being transparent. I really hope that it's not a sore subject ever for you. You should be talking about this with pride and because you do it in such a way that you really want to help people. I think that's a great gift. So I really appreciate your time. And everyone check out chrisreining.com for all this and more. You've got so much great content and offers for people. So I hope that people will follow you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Farnoosh.
Thanks so much to Chris for stopping by. His website is chrisreining.com. That's Chris, chrisreining.com. And he's also on Twitter at Chris J. Reining. If you missed any of this, want to go back and relearn how Chris got to retire early, go to somoneypodcast.com. There you can download the audio as well as the free transcript. And you can also ask me a question for our Friday episodes of Ask Farnoosh. Just click on Ask Farnoosh. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I hope your day is so money. Hosted hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.